Welcome to No Longer Conformed. I am Eric Garthy, and we are in class with Joseph, Lessons in God's Plan. In this session, we'll be looking at Genesis chapter 50, verses 1 to 26, the fulfilled life in God's plan. In this last session on the life of Joseph, I want to tell you a story. Let's begin with those first couple of verses in Genesis 50, verses 1 and 2. And then Joseph fell on his father's face and wept over him and kissed him. And Joseph commanded his servants and physicians to embalm his father. So the physicians embalmed Israel. It was a sight to behold, Jacob's funeral. All of Egypt mourned, verses 3 through 6. 40 days were required for him, for such are the days required for those who are embalmed. And the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. And when the days of his mourning were past, Joseph spoke to the household of Pharaoh, saying, "If now I have found favor in your eyes, please speak in the hearing of Pharaoh, saying, 'My father made me swear, saying, behold, I am dying. In my grave, which I dug for myself in the land of Canaan, there you shall bury me. Now, therefore, please, let me go up and bury my father, and I will come back.' And Pharaoh said, 'Go up and bury your father, as he made you swear.'" Listen, the leaders of Egypt attended the funeral. Look at verses 7 through 9. "So Joseph went to bury his father, and with him went up all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, and all the elders of the land of Egypt, as well as all the house of Joseph, his brothers, and his father's house. Only their little ones, their flocks, and their herds they left in the land of Goshen. And there went up with him both chariots and horsemen, and it was a very great gathering. And the inhabitants of Canaan took notice." Look at verse 10 down to verse 14. "When they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond the Jordan, and they mourned there with a great and very solemn lamentation. He observed 7 days of mourning for his father. And when the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning at the threshing floor of Atad, they said, 'This is a deep mourning of the Egyptians.' Therefore, its name was called Abel Mizraim, which is beyond the Jordan. So his sons did for him just as he had commanded them, for his sons carried him to the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah, before Mamre, which Abraham bought with the field from Ephron the Hittite as property for a burial place. And after he had buried his father, Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brothers, and all who went up with him to bury his father." Now let me ask you a question. How will you be remembered? How will you be remembered? Will it be like Jacob? Jacob served God. Jacob guarded the promise. Jacob led his family. Let me read an excerpt from Charles Spurgeon's biography. "Londoners love passions. They turn out east and west, north and south for a great occasion. Coronations and jubilees will attract hundreds of thousands of spectators, but London's greatest crowds are for funerals. It is an English characteristic to pay honor to the departed. When Wellington's body was carried through the streets with all military pomp and simplicity, there was hardly standing space along the route. Queen Victoria's Jubilee celebrations drew an enormous concourse to the streets of the capital of the empire, but the crowds were small in comparison to those which lined the roads when a company of crowned heads and royal persons followed all that was mortal of England's great queen. February 8th, 1892, saw London give up to the homage of a man without a title or even an academic degree, with no political reputation or no aristocratic connections. South London, from the elephant to the castle to Norwood Cemetery, a distance of nearly 5 miles, presented a unique and wonderful appearance. It was a national tribute, a funeral procession, more than 2 miles in length, including men and women of all classes and conditions. The simple olive casket at the head was carried amid palm branches and flowers. The press said that over 100,000 people had taken part in the memorial services, and that practically all London had suspended activities as a mark of respect for the dead. "What are they waiting for?" inquired a stranger, looking upon the closely packed thousands standing at the entrance to Norwood Cemetery. "Don't you know? It's Spurgeon's funeral," said a woman, almost under her breath. "Spurgeon? You mean the preacher at the tabernacle? Well, I never thought London cared so much about any preacher." With uncanny insight, C.H. Spurgeon, at the close of a sermon on December 27th, 1874, some 18 years earlier, he said, "In a little while, there will be a concourse of persons in the streets. Methinks I hear someone inquiring, 'What are all these people waiting for?' Do you not know? He is to be buried today." "And who is that?" "It is Spurgeon." "What? The man that preached at the tabernacle?" "Yes. He is to be buried today. That will happen very soon. And when you see my coffin carried to the silent grave, I would like every one of you, whether converted or not, to be constrained to say, 'He did earnestly urge us, in plain and simple language, not to put off consideration of eternal things. He did entreat us to look to Christ. Now he's gone. Our blood is not at his door if we perish.'" His burial was a huge national event and a great spectacle for those in the land to witness. And then, look at verses 15 to 17. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "Perhaps Joseph will hate us and may actually repay us for all the evil which we did to him." So they sent messengers to Joseph, saying, "Before your father died, he commanded, saying, 'Thus you shall say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you. Now please forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of your father.' And Joseph wept when they spoke to him." Satan attacks in weak moments. The brothers were afraid of revenge. Their guilt was still being felt. They tried to use dead Jacob's influence. They sought forgiveness again. They couldn't see from God's perspective. They were already forgiven. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Why? It's a sad moment when forgiveness is not received. It's the evidence of an inability to forgive yourself. Joseph went beyond forgiving his brothers. Verse 18, down to verse 21. "Then his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, 'Behold, we are servants.' Joseph said to them, 'Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day, to save many people alive. Now therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones.' and he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. Joseph saw God's sovereignty. Judah's idea was actually God's plan. God sent Joseph to Egypt to preserve the remnant, to keep alive Jacob's family. Listen, the Jews killed Jesus on the cross. But look at Acts chapter 2 in verse 23. Him being delivered by the determined purpose and foreknowledge of God, you have taken by lawless hands, having crucified and put to death. The determined purpose and foreknowledge of God. Listen, let me ask you, are you able to see the events of your life from God's perspective? How do they fit into His eternal plan? The purpose of looking at Joseph's life, to realize that God is sovereign in all things. Joseph served God, and what a fulfilled life he lived for the Lord. He was blessed with old age, verse 22. So Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's household, and Joseph lived 110 years. He saw his great-grandchildren, verse 23. Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. The children of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were also brought up on Joseph's knees. He became like a patriarch to the family. Verses 24 and 25. And Joseph said to his brethren, I am dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land of which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. Joseph made his brothers swear to carry his bones with them to the promised land. Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry my bones from here. This was fulfilled by Moses many, many years later. Exodus chapter 13, verse 19. And Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had placed the children of Israel under solemn oath, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here with you. And Joshua, in Joshua 24, and verse 32, after 40 years in the wilderness and 5.5 years of war conquering the promised land, the bones of Joseph, which the children of Israel had brought up out of Egypt, they buried at Shechem in the plot of ground which Jacob had bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of silver, and which had become an inheritance of the children of Joseph. What is the significance of all this? God is in control. God gave a promise to Abram of a great nation from his seed. The promise passed to Isaac. The promise passed to Jacob. The promise passed to Joseph. But a nation of about 70 people is not a great nation. Bruce Wilkerson's walk through the Bible illustration. God took the fetus of Israel, approximately 70 people. He implanted it in the surrogate womb of Egypt. It was kept safe and nourished. It grew to full term. Exodus chapter 1, verse 7. But the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly, multiplied and grew exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them. The child Israel was uncomfortable to the mother, Egypt. He had to be delivered. Egypt suffered the labor pain of 10 plagues, and the new nation was born in the Exodus. But that's another story, that of the Exodus. What a great story, the life of Joseph. What a great testimony to God's sovereign control of His plan. You give thought to all that, and you have a great day.